This is Shirley Bradley and Linda Maxson, and we're at her home, and we're going to be just talking about real memories. And this is June 25th, 2004. And I'm just going to start by asking Linda a little bit about her own background, where she grew up, went to school, and how she happened to go to Rio.
I grew up in Lansing, was born in Lansing, lived in Lansing all my life. I graduated from Sexton High School and then Lansing Community College with an associate degree in business. And my very first job, paying job after college, was at Oldsmobile. I worked there 6 months and there was a layoff and it was all strictly seniority, and I was the second lowest seniority of all of General Motors in Lansing. So obviously I was laid off the very first day, and I was heartbroken because my father worked at Oldsmobile, my sister worked at Oldsmobile, and it was my dream to work at Oldsmobile. And my boss, whose name was Bob Beasley, at Oldsmobile, came over and he put his arm around me and he says, "Honey, you go over to Rio, to White Motors, and talk to my wife, Dorothy Beasley, who works in personnel, and she'll give you a job."
Beasley.
Dorothy Beasley, okay. Personnel. It was February, the snow, ice, and I, on my lunch hour, I walked from Oldsmobile to Baker Street because I couldn't get my car out of the parking lot. It was, you know, once you're in, you're in. So anyway, I walked over there, and I didn't want to walk over there.
I guess not.
But anyway, I did, and they hired me as a temporary stenographer. And my first job was working in purchasing for Art Fromm, who was the purchaser for non-productive items for the plant. And I worked for him for about a month because his secretary got married and went on her honeymoon, so I worked with him. It was just temporary, but then a job opened in the purchasing department, and I worked for Ted Nash.
Ted Nash.
Mm-hmm. And he was the electrical and paint buyer. And he taught me, he kind of turned the paint buying or ordering over to me and let me call the different paint companies. He would tell me how much to order, but I would get on the phone and, it's lengthy process to go through all this ordering and following up on the paint, and it was exciting that I was able to do that. And I probably worked for him maybe a year and a half or two in the purchasing department, and then the job as head secretary to the director of purchasing opened up, so I moved up to the front office. And I love that job. It was secretary to Fred Colligrove, who was the director of purchasing. Fred Colligrove.
Colligrove?
Colligrove.
How would you spell that?
C-O-L-A-G-R-O-S-F.
Oh, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I should say that there'll be people transcribing these tapes later,
okay.
When I come across something that I think they're not going to know either.
Bud Barton was the man that hired me. He was the director of purchasing at the time. And he changed jobs over and became the director of purchasing and planning and scheduling. And I don't know what his title was, but when he moved up to take on that job, Fred Colligrove filled his job as director of purchasing. And so that's why I moved up to be his secretary. And I was in his office probably a year, maybe a year and a half. And there was another change of personnel, and Jack Adams, who was the president, needed a secretary, so he took the secretary to Arnold Schubert, who was vice president of engineering, and Arnold Schubert requested that I be his secretary. So I transferred from purchasing to engineering and was his secretary, Arnold Schubert, for probably 4 or 5 years at least.
And how was he to work for, and what did you do? You were secretary of work,
obviously. I was secretary to him. And what I did for him was handle all the internal communications between the whole entire engineering department and him. And I handled vacation schedules and pay schedules and arranged meetings and just anything involving engineering to keep the department moving smoothly went through our office. Arnold Schubert was a unique person. He had a heart of gold, but not very many people probably knew that. He was a stickler for detail and correctness. And he didn't care who was around, he was going to correct something, in which was right. It should be corrected. But he was difficult to work for, but I learned a lot from him.
Did you?
To this day, I think about Arnold, you know, and some of the things that he made sure were correct, and he was always right.
That doggone, huh?
Yeah, he was always right, but he was a great person and great for the company. And, you know, there was just so many wonderful people. It was hard for me to leave purchasing because I thought there'll never be another department as closely knit and fun to work in as purchasing. And I was wrong. I went to engineering, and because I didn't know any of them, it was way in the other building, you know, it just seemed like they were in another world. But they were every bit as much as good as the people I knew in purchasing. I think it's that way any place you work. You're just a little afraid, you know, until you get into it, until you know what you're supposed to do and who the people are. But, yeah, it was a great opportunity for me. And
who did you work for in engineering?
Arnold Schubert.
Oh, I'm sorry. That was... Mm-hmm. And purchasing was?
Fred Colligrove.
Oh, yes.
And before that, sorry, it was Ted Nash. And the very first was Arthur.
Art Farm.
Mm-hmm. Arthur.
In the paint. Mm-hmm. I'm curious about the paint. You were ordering the paint. This is for the military trucks?
No, it was for commercial trucks.
For the
All
commercial
the different
truck.
Colors, red and yellow, blue, green. You know, I remember DuPont. What was his name? Red? Somebody, I can't remember his name, but I got to know them all, you know. I think the most fun was following up on orders because so-and-so truck had to go out on a certain date. Did we have the paint? And it was I kind of kept track of when the paint came in so they knew that we had it in the plant for each job. And it was fun. It was fun to do that.
I can imagine.
Made me feel important.
Now, obviously, you did it well.
Yeah, other than just sitting and typing and filing and.
Oh, know. I would think so. There's mm-hmm. a whole human scope to it, then, other than just, as you say,
you
sitting.
You feel
there.
Like you're part of it.
Yeah. And that's good because then you have pride in and the product, pride in your job.
Right.
That's marvelous.
Right. You know, the only disappointment, and it's kind of shameful, I never saw the plant. I never. When I worked there, never went out and saw the production line. I never went further out in the plant than traffic. It always seemed like there was never the right time, you know, or somebody would say, well, I'll take you out and we'll show you. Never did.
Hmm.
And my husband was a supplier to the company in his job. He'd seen the whole thing.
Because he was
all over the plant. He knew more people from the plant than I did, you know, but he saw it, I never did, and I've always regretted that I didn't see it when it was actually in production,
right?
But it would be interesting.
Going back to when you came from Oldsmobile, what year was that when you hired into Rio?
67.
In 67.
March of 67.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked there until the last day when everything was closed down.
Oh, what was that like?
It was dreadful. It was dreadful. It was so gloomy and so sad. And for me, I knew I would be okay in my life because we decided that it's the right time, we'll start a family. And so that's what we did. For other people, it was their life, you know, and they had to start all over and find a new job, and it was scary and sad and maddening.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So being in the position that you were in, hearing a lot of, you know, executives talking that sort of thing, you must have felt it was coming. You must have kind of some inkling.
I just had a feeling that it was over. I remember the man that bought the company, Capert, he talked so positive, like it was going to go on and on and on. But then you'd hear rumors, you know, that it wasn't going to go on, or that it was just, he was just buying it to sell it, you know. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I had a bad feeling that it was not going to go on.
Sixth sense.
Yeah, that it was not going to go on.
Did he come into your department, or you saw him?
He used to come in a lot and sit and talk, and he first talked to Mr. Schubert. And, yeah, just...
And then when he was starting to let people go, I've heard a lot about Mildred Johnson.
Right. She was his secretary, a right-hand woman, right-hand man. Yeah. Used to have big meetings over in the clubhouse and hoopla that this is going to happen and that's going to happen and things are going to be better. And, you know, it just was a...
Like political promises.
Right.
Yeah, I've heard some really...
Yep.
To a person, just what you have just experienced and felt. Speaking of the clubhouse,
mm-hmm.
did you belong to the Girls Club?
Yes, I was president.
Tell me a little. You were. Tell me about that.
I couldn't tell you what year I was president.
But that's
but
all right.
I was president for 1 year from the very beginning when I started at Rio. When I hired in, it was White Motor, and then it became White Motor Division. What was it, White Motor Division, Diamond Rio, that come together. I started with the Girls Club right from the very beginning, and I enjoyed every minute of it. It was wonderful. Because you would meet all these people from all the different departments that really you would have no contact with on a close basis if
sure.
you didn't belong to the club.
Were they, for the most part, secretaries and office workers?
Yes. Yeah.
Nobody from down like production or...
I don't remember that there was. No, I don't remember there were any production people. We'd meet at noon on the lunch hour, and probably our lunch hours didn't coincide with theirs. You know, mm-hmm. We did have some activities in the evening. One, the happiest memories I have of the clubhouse are the Christmas parties.
Oh, tell me about the Christmas parties. What were they like?
Fabulous. They'd have a... I can't remember whether it was a... I guess it was probably a band. And you get all dressed up and go there and just have a wonderful evening dancing and talking with people. And it was a highlight. You always look forward to it.
Is that right?
Always look forward to it.
A nice banquet and a
right.
program, perhaps.
Right. And then after I moved over to engineering, I was in the steering gear club. And the steering gear club started out to be men only.
Oh.
It was like an executive club for the men, and they'd meet once a month and have a dinner meeting and a speaker and whatever, and it was sort of a social thing. Well, then there was they decided that it was discriminating not to have the executive women in the club. So all the executive secretaries were invited to join. So for a couple of years I was in that, and I remember 1 year we were supposed to have a banquet, a formal banquet, and it was March 17th. And we woke and we had flowers and all, you know, it was a fabulous evening plan. Woke up to like 20 inches of snow, so the whole thing was canceled.
Oh.
And it was a couple weeks later. I still have the vase out on the porch from that evening, you know, commemorative of that evening.
But,
yeah, a lot of fun. A lot of fun socializing. Seems like we worked hard, but we played hard. You know,
it just sounds great. I wish I'd been there
at
that time.
Yeah.
So the Girls Club and the Steering Gear Club were pretty much the same gals after the women got in.
Right. Some of the same girls were in that. Right.
What kind of events did you... in the steering gear, was that just more or less for social?
Right.
Okay.
And
the women's club was social, but you did some things too?
You know, I after I left Rio, I was in another group, and it's hard to separate the two.
I'm thinking of the red stocking that I remember when I was a kid, red stocking.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't that young, but I mean,
yeah,
as opposed to now.
Yeah.
Christmas parties where the families came.
Right. Seems like we used to do a lot for needy families, that maybe people that were employees or the offshoot of employees that needed help at Christmas time for food or gifts. It wasn't just a social group. We did things, but to be specific, I really can't.
That's okay. I guess while I'm trying to remember what I was thinking, we were lucky in 92 to interview several of the other gals that worked mm-hmm. in the office staff. You're the first one I've talked to about the Steering Gear Club. That's great.
Mm-hmm.
Ardith Papin was one of the people desperately wanted in Fern Placeway mm-hmm. to interview. And they invited us several times to their luncheons. I don't know if you were present on the south end of Lansing. And,
Golden, a long time ago I did.
Yeah, right. Golden Triangle or something restaurant, which I don't think there enough. But Lisa Ardith and I were invited and went two or three times to the lunches and had a great time. And Fern and Ardith both said, yes, we'd like to talk to you. But it just never happened. And mm-hmm. later we discovered that Ardith, for one, was ill, and we didn't know it.
Mm-hmm.
And the times that she thought she would
be
interviewed, discovered that maybe she had to go through treatment or something, mm-hmm. and then was too weak afterwards. So bless her heart. But she seems to have touched a lot of lives.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Everybody knew her. Yeah. She was in a nurse.
First aid.
And Fern was in personnel, wasn't she?
Yes, I think she was. Mm-hmm. And we got to talk to Hilda Smith, and I don't mm-hmm. know if she was there when you came, because
she was. She was in accounting, was she?
No, Hilda Smith was personnel.
Personnel.
Yeah. My dad used to, that's why I'm not sure if you knew her, because my dad hired in, she's the one that called him, and
yeah.
And he didn't think that he'd been hired, so he didn't show up, and she called him and said, "You get in here." We didn't have a phone, so she had to call the neighbors, and that sort of thing. But then when she was in Provincial House West, Lisa and I went to talk to her. What a lovely little woman. And by her bedside, she had two things. She said, "These are the two most important things I have, my Bible and my reel." Big book they made, a memory book that they made for when she retired.
Yeah.
Those are the two things that meant all the world to her.
Yeah.
And she was, I think, in her 90s.
Yeah.
And just as bright mentally and
great.
Accommodating, gracious.
Yeah.
So we were very
That's
lucky.
Why it's so important to get that type of an interview, because it's lost. It's absolutely lost.
Oh, it is. When they go there, those memories are gone. And, of course, real being gone.
Yeah.
And that must have made you feel bad, like it did everybody when they tore the clubhouse down.
Well, I remember the day that it burned. I knew it was burning. I, of course, heard it. And we had to go to East Lansing that night and drive past on the freeway, and you could see the flames.
You
could. It was horrible. It was absolutely horrible. I just, it's bad enough to know what's happening, but to see it, it's even worse. You know, all the memories and everything.
Oh, everything. It's like you took my childhood home and burned it down.
Your phone's ringing.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, it's hard,
I've heard a lot of stories about the fire there. That the mayor was the one who drove the bulldozer or the whatever.
Oh, really?
He found it. I've been told by other folks I've talked to, and they don't mind if I mention it, because I asked them, that he wanted that land so that the city could sell it, and he had people coming in that wanted to buy that area, but it had to be taken down. Well, of course, the plant was old,
mm-hmm.
But I don't think the clubhouse needed to go, mm-hmm. and maybe the administration building, but they said that it was on the verge of being designated a historical site,
mm-hmm.
that he had a 24-hour grace period between, it's like a crack,
mm-hmm.
that he found. And so that was the day, that night was the night it was set to burn, because the 24 hours would be up the next day.
Really?
Uh-huh. And it's interesting, too, because, I'm trying to think when this happened, sometime in the 90s, I got a phone call from a young woman who had been taking a photography course, of course, at LCC, and the instructor had told them, you know, be out and about with your camera all the time. See something, take pictures of it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all going to work into your studies. And we can evaluate, so on and so on. Well, anyway, she had a little apartment. She was a single mom, had a little baby, a new, an infant, really. And she had gotten up to 10 o'clock feeding, I think, and looked out of her kitchen window while she was heating the bottle and saw the flames. Mm-hmm. And she thought, oh, my gosh. Well, first she was really frightened, and then she thought, oh, my camera. So she bundled up the baby and the camera and drove down and parked in by the depot on the north side of
Lake,
and got her camera out and started clicking away. And a policeman came up to her and said, who are you and what are you doing here? She says, well, I'm so-and-so and I'm just taking pictures. He took her name and address and told her to leave. And she said, why? I'm not doing anything. I'm just taking pictures for my class. But he insisted she leave. So she said, I went back to my car, and he drove away. And she said, then I thought, So she went back. She stood under the eaves of the depot roof, where she really was kind of in the shadows, and kept taking pictures. And she showed me all the pictures. She had two rolls of them. And it wasn't long after that that she started getting threatening phone calls from somebody who didn't identify themselves. It was a man. And he insisted that she turn over those negatives to him and the prints. And she got frightened after this went on for several weeks. And she got frightened, and she took them all to her dad, and he lived out in the country, and he took them. Mm-hmm. So she didn't even have them after that. So they were safe.
Mm-hmm.
And she brought them to me because she said, I don't know why this was so secret, and I don't know why I was hounded. You have any idea? And this was a brand new story to me, and I didn't know. I just, through these interviews this year, just found out the other half of the story. And now I wish I could find her again
and to say, tell her,
here's the reason. This is why. You had pictures they didn't want you to have. Well, of course, that was pretty obvious.
Cover up.
But why, she had no idea. This is interesting. And almost all the people we interviewed them all say, oh, they tore down the clubhouse. Mm-hmm. How could they do that?
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, we would love it. It would make a fabulous place for our museum.
Oh, right.
I mean, right there on the site.
Oh, I know it. The woodwork and the mahogany when you walk in.
Oh, is that right?
It was absolutely gorgeous.
Was it?
Yeah. It was unique, you know. There's nothing like it. Nothing like it.
Yeah. The entire...
The front, when you walk in, the big wooden doors and the, you know, the door going into the ballroom. It was gorgeous. It was absolutely gorgeous. It was old, of course, but, and it could have been updated and improved on, but today it would be nothing like it.
I went there when I was 4 or 5. We lived in Holt without a car. And neighbors took us in because I imagine somebody worked at Rio. And my dad had worked there too. So at any rate, we went into, I imagine it was the ballroom, and saw, I think we were there a couple of times. Once we saw Frank Buck, who was the Bring Them Back Alive guy. Mm-hmm. He would go to Africa and bring back animals and show them. I don't recall any animals being there, but I recall that he was there. I was 4 or 5. And then we went to see Major Bowes, and I don't think you'll know who he was, but he had an amateur hour on the radio.
Oh, uh-huh.
And he came to Lansing, and he was there. Mm-hmm. And so I do remember being in that room.
I just remembered with the Girls Club and engineering, we made Thanksgiving baskets, and I have a picture of all the engineering people and Girls Club with all the floor full of baskets. I remember that for Thanksgiving. So
now, where did the baskets go?
To needy people for Thanksgiving.
People, families that worked there?
Families, or, you know, like anybody that knew of anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that was Girls Club, because I remember Doris Dow and Zoraida.
Oh, yes, Doris. Yes, we've had a lot of interaction with Doris too.
Yeah, she was the mainstay.
She was the Girls Cup, you know, the thing going for the lunches. And
Zoraida.
Yeah, we've lost her too. And who?
Zoraida Litschke.
Zoraida.
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 Zoraida. Litschke, I think it is. L-I-C-H-T-I-E. And there was Gwen Oliver. She was engineering. I think she was in engineering. Yeah. If I can find that picture.
I've heard, and a lot of the folks I've talked to have all referred to Claire Laudenslager. Was he there when you were there?
Mm-hmm. Yes, he was. And I used to do some work for him. If his secretary was gone, he'd have me come up and do his dictation.
Let me think. If something, anything you'd like to share or ask or anything that I haven't even touched on, please do.
Mm-hmm.
So you were there from 63, was it?
Right. Well,
67.
67.
Yeah,
67. What was it, 75?
To 70, April of 75.
Right.
Yeah. Somebody I talked to, don't remember which gal it was from, I think maybe the Girls Club too, said that she went into work and the doors were padlocked.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, I sat down and cried.
Yeah.
Were you able to get any, did you have a pension plan?
No, I worked there 9 years and 4 months, so I have no pension.
Oh, you had to be there how long?
You had to be there 10 years.
To qualify for it. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Mm. But I'll tell you one thing I did. After I moved over to become Arnold Trooper's secretary, I was on salary. I wasn't hourly. So I was able to be in the, where I would contribute to my retirement, and they take so much out, whatever they call it, I can't remember. They take so much out of my check, and I had about $1,200 built up in that account in my name. And I think part of the reason that I had a sick feeling that it was going under was because of my husband's work. They told him, get your bills in. You know, if you we owe you anything, get them in.
Oh.
Because this is going to go south. And so I thought, $1,200. You know, and it was a lot of money back then to me, you know. And so I went up to payroll, and I talked to Essie, who was my friend, Essie McBride, and I said, I'd like to take my money out. No, I'll do that. And her boss came and talked to me. If you take this out, you can't start back up where it is if things continue and we're okay, like we're going to be okay, you'll have to start all over again. You can't start back at $1,200 and keep on going, you know, and you're going to lose a lot of ground by doing that. And I said, well, I'll take that chance. I'll take my money. And so I did. And not very many people did that. And they ended up losing whatever they had in their payroll.
Payroll deduction?
Right. And
they kept it there, or they banked it for you?
Right. Right, the company did. It was in an account. You know, it's like a IRA, like a 401k.
Mm-hmm.
Well, anyway, I took my $1,200, and we had just bought this house, and it was pretty empty, and so I thought, I am going to buy something with that money that I can always look at and know that that was my money from Dining Wheel.
So it was from my hard work.
Yeah.
What did you get with it?
A pool table.
Fun thing.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
sure. Why not?
We've always enjoyed it. So there's my pension right there.
But you can see it and touch
yes,
it.
Yes, right.
A lot of
right.
people lost everything.
Oh, I know they did.
And some got some back, and some got a little back, and some got nothing back, I guess, and it took years.
Right.
And somebody else told me, too, that Capra or Rio never really ever paid any of it out of there. He never paid any of it back, but
right.
that the insurance company had to.
Right.
After
right.
all the litigation.
Right.
So your working conditions were pretty good.
Oh, yes.
You had
yes.
your own office. And,
right.
And was your equipment updated, your
yes.
typewriters and
everything
whatever?
Everything was fine. In fact, I got a brand. You see, after Arnold Schubert, there was a big shakeup, and Arnold Schubert was fired, and Jack Adams and Loudon Slager, and that is when George Stekiel became my boss.
Oh, and he's the one that went to Spartan.
To
Motors.
Spartan. He and a lot of the engineers went out there and started that, and I kept in close contact with them. So I was just a hop, skipping and jumping away. And Bill Foster is close family friend, and he was on the ground floor of starting Spartan with George. But so George Stekiel was my boss for about a year and a half, and then it was John Knox who came with George from Chrysler or wherever they came from.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, I had just gotten a new typewriter about 2 weeks before. It was all done and out, and it was a wonderful typewriter. Somebody stole it, actually, before we were even done working. My typewriter disappeared, so somebody knew more than we did, you know, what was going on. I don't know where it went. We never did find it.
For goodness sake.
Yeah, yeah.
And you had your own office.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't have
outer
to be
office.
In the outer office.
To his office.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It was lovely. Right on Washington Avenue, the very end corner building before the clubhouse where you walk across.
Oh, northwest corner, mm-hmm. so to speak.
Right.
And you could look out all day.
Oh, yeah, see everything. Yeah,
well, how wonderful. Because you don't think of that in connections with a factory.
Right. Yeah, it was up in front. And of course, the staff engineers were on the same floor. There was probably seven of them, or eight. Mr. Schubert's office, and then the staff engineers were kind of like this, and then the secretaries out in the middle, and then upstairs was drafting and the blueprint department, Homer Hopkins.
That was three floors?
It was two floors.
Two floors.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Homer Hopkins, who was the head of the blueprint department, used to work at Oldsmobile, and he knew my father, because my father was an engineer at Oldsmobile.
Oh, he was.
But he died in 1950, and Homer had known him before that. So
Homer?
Homer Hopkins.
Holbert.
Homer, H-O-M-E-R. Homer Hopkins.
Okay.
Yeah, he knew my dad. He would have been my dad's age, approximately. But
that's a nice connection.
Yeah.
So after the plant closed, did you go back to work? You mentioned starting a family.
No, I did not go back to work, and I have not worked since.
Lovely that you could be home and be at home mom with your
I'm
kids.
I'm telling you, I wouldn't change those years for anything.
Oh, no, they go too fast.
And my daughters have the same feeling. They want to be a stay-at-home mom. And our second daughter was born with a lot of health problems, which she's overcome.
Oh, wonderful.
But it made a difference me being home and to work with her and help her. And after our girls were about 4 or 5 years old, his parents and my mother, both their health declined, and we ended up taking care of them here at home and to keep them out of the nursing home. So for 10 years, it was just a revolving
door.
But I wouldn't give those years up for anything. You know, I was fortunate that I could be home.
Oh, yes.
That I could be home.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned your husband was a supplier for mm-hmm. Real. What kind of products?
He works for Fuller Brush Company. In fact, his very first day with Fuller Brush was the same as my first day at Diamond Real.
Is that right?
March 6, 1967. And it's his one and only job, and he still has it. It has never changed out.
Oh, and so he must love what he's doing.
Yeah, and everybody loves him. But it's commercial Fuller Brush. It's industrial. It's not household.
This door-to-door. Is not how door-to-door.
Not door-to-door.
That's Fuller Brush Man.
No, but he's still a Fuller Brush Man. You know?
He always will be.
Yeah.
What kind of products would Rio buy from him?
Brooms and brushes, heavy-duty push brooms and mops.
Cleaning
supplies,
compounds.
Right. Floor, you know, like chemicals for wax and cleaning and
all that.
Window cleaner, you name it. From the top down, any kind of cleaning product to clean anything.
So he would come in, was there a specific person that
he used to talk to Don Ellis out in the plant, and I think he was maintenance or something.
Oh, okay.
He talked to the maintenance supervisor. He'd sell the products to the supervisor, and then he would come back at night or whenever they would do their cleaning and show them how to use it and train them.
Oh.
And he does this all over the country, any place he sells anything. He does a lot of training. A lot of training. That's probably his biggest part of his job.
I was going to say, that's a real...
And it's never-ending because there's always a new person coming in. You know, it's constant change.
So he's a busy man. So was he able to get what Rio owed him there toward the end?
Yes,
he didn't
yes.
end up holding
right.
the bag. Well,
right.
That's good.
Right.
Because I've heard a lot of horror stories.
Oh, I know it.
About
I
how
know.
They had to hide
yeah.
parts
yeah.
so they could finish a truck.
Yeah.
That sort of thing. Well, let me glance
it
back.
Was a great place to work.
That's what I was going to ask
great
you.
Friendship.
Look, you're looking back.
Oh, I wouldn't regret it a minute. Not 1 minute. Not 1 minute. It was a good livelihood. It was a safe place to work. It was friendly, and I always felt like I was appreciated. I didn't feel like, gotta go to work today. I loved it, you know. And I have missed it through the years.
Have you?
I've missed the, sometimes when I feel like I had no adult contact on a, you know, intellectual level.
Mm-hmm. All you know were children's songs.
Yeah. I miss getting up in the morning and getting dressed and going to work. And
that structure.
Right. Yeah. But
you're probably still active with the retirees group?
As much as I can be, but a lot of times it seems like they fall on the wrong date.
Oh, yeah.
Or we're gone or whatever. But no, I do keep in touch.
Do you go to the summer gathering that they usually have?
I have a couple of times. But there again, it's sometimes
depends
not
on
right.
when.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, you know, I sit here thinking I envy you that wonderful experience you had and the contacts and the fun and the work was not drudgery, it was a good thing. Do you think that your pay scale was commensurate with whatever they were getting at Oldsmobile in the offices?
It was.
And you had hospitalization and...
Yes, I did, and it was fine. It was completely, for me, it was completely fair and I had no ill feelings at all, like I wasn't being taken care of.
And the building that you worked in, the administration building,
mm-hmm.
excuse me, that was all up to date and good condition?
Actually, compared to Oldsmobile, when I was at Oldsmobile, the administration building was brand new. That
it was.
White, black building, it was... I think it opened in 1963 or 64, and that's when I hired in. Like, it wasn't even a year old. And so you compare the white gleaming floors and the granite, and, you know, the type of things that were in that building. But you when you came over to Rio, it was the history. And it was just, you couldn't compare the two buildings. The equipment we had, the desk we had, everything was fine. But you look at the structure, you couldn't compare. One was old, one was brand new. One was very modern, one was old-fashioned. But, you know, the bathrooms were clean, and, you know, we had our areas where we could eat lunch, and You know, you really couldn't compare them because they weren't at all, it wasn't apples to apples.
Mm-hmm.
But the work conditions were fine. It was just the structure wasn't the same. I remember my very first job working for Art Fromm. His the windows were, his office was very close to the outside wall. You know the train tracks? My desk would jiggle when the freight trains would go through. And they'd go three or four, you know, just rumble through. And sometimes you'd be on the phone and you'd say, just a minute, we have to wait for the train. I mean, it was noisy. It was, you were right there by the railroad tracks. And
that's the corner you were in.
That was, you know, I mean, that was, purchasing was even closer to the to that outside wall than engineering. But I don't know, it was just a totally different experience, but I wouldn't trade it for the world.
Mm. Sounds wonderful. Well, I thank you so much.
Well,
any last thoughts or?
Well, I wish the historical committee well, and I think you're doing a fabulous job, and I think it's commendable what
thank
you're
you.
Doing. And I think the celebration in July will be wonderful.
Oh, and I hope that you can take part in some of these events. Friday and Saturday, 16th, 17th, are going to be really a lot of fun.